Chapter 7. Sheriff Stilinski decides to sleep on the couch rather than try to relocate the entire pack to his house. It's actually a fairly comfortable sofa, and he wakes up the next morning more rested than he would have expected, though with an aching back and shoulder. The others rise a little more slowly, reluctantly preparing for school. Stiles barely slept at all, having been plagued by bad dreams. But he's had a lot of coffee and Adderall, so he's relatively perky. He's recovered enough to insist that everyone eat breakfast, even though he himself is eating a Snickers bar. Derek gets up with the rest of them, which is unusual. Normally, when the alarm goes off, he buries his head underneath a pillow and goes back to sleep. But today he's up, showered, and dressed. He eats his breakfast while pacing around in pent-up agitation, before finally planting himself in front of Stiles and saying, "You're not going anywhere today. You can't." "I have school," Stiles says, in the sort of tone that is not at all convinced of what he's saying. "And I never did get the shopping done. Lydia wanted key lime pie." Lydia thinks about rolling her eyes or mentioning that the pie isn't that important, but it's obvious that Stiles is perseverating on small and inconsequential things due to trauma, so she just lets it go. The pie is Stiles' effort to pretend things are okay, and she won't take that away from him. "I don't care," Derek retorts. Everything about him is tense, like he's ready to break. "I can't." He suddenly paces back and forth in a small, tight line in front of Stiles. "I could have lost you yesterday, and I didn't even know it. I can't do this again. I'll wear that stupid fucking vest if I have to." Stiles bites down on his lip and gives a worried glance around the rest of the room. I guess that would be all right. Can he come to school with me?"
"I don't see any reason why not, but I think we had better call ahead to let them know," Sheriff Stilinski says. "Why don't you two come to work with me today?" The relief that washes through Derek is so sudden that he actually sways a little as his body relaxes. He nods to the sheriff.
"Yeah, that sounds good."
"Wait, why do you two get the day off and the rest of us are stuck going to school?" Erica demands, but her tone is joking and she slides an arm around Stiles' waist in support. "That doesn't seem fair to me." Derek feels almost stupidly relieved. At least for the moment, it lifts the mood enough to find one of his infuriating smirks.
"Because we're prettier."
"Jerk, I am the prettiest one here," Erica says. "Just because you show the most cleavage doesn't make you the prettiest," Lydia says. "No, the fact that I'm the prettiest means I'm the prettiest,"
Erica replies, smirking back. "Ladies, this is a fascinating conversation," Stilinski says, "but I'm thinking that you should probably get going."
Allison hugs Stiles and rubs her cheek against his, then repeats this with Derek before heading out the door. "We'll check in throughout the day, okay?" she says.
"Yeah," Stiles says. "Be careful. Don't get your phones taken away." And he swallows. "We'll come pick you up after school, I guess."
"We can come to you," Allison offers. "Lydia and I both have our cars. It's a little more squished than we're used to, but we can do it."
"Yeah," Stiles says again. There are suddenly so many logistics to attend to. Scott and Isaac have lacrosse practice after school, and he knows that Allison has an archery tournament coming up over the weekend. Boyd has to go home for at least an hour or two each afternoon to pick his siblings up from school, make sure they do their homework, and eat some dinner. Erica's also required to put in appearances at home periodically, or her mother gets worried. Just the thought of trying to coordinate all this gives Stiles a headache. Lydia tosses her hair.
"Stiles, stop worrying about the details. You have that look."
She waves a hand to indicate that she knows what he's thinking.
"We'll sort it out at lunch, okay?"
"Okay," Stiles says gratefully. They troop out of the apartment and Derek locks it behind them. Once they're in the cruiser and on their way to the station, Stilinski says. Styles, I'm going to embarrass you for a minute, okay? Joy, Styles says, rolling his eyes. I just want you to know that I'm really proud of you for the way you've handled this, his father says. Letting us worry about things and take care of you instead of trying to handle it all yourself. Styles immediately flushes red. I'm getting congratulated for hiding in a corner with my head in the proverbial sand.
Yes, that's exactly it, Derek replies. You're being congratulated for not trying to pretend that nothing is wrong so you can fix it all yourself.
He gives a little shrug and adds,
Besides, it makes us feel better to help you once in a while.
It sure as hell wasn't making you feel better last night, Styles retorts.
Are you kidding?
Derek throws manly pride to the wind and wraps an arm around Styles, glad that the teenager has climbed into the back with him rather than sitting up front with his father.
No,
Styles says, his tone abrupt, almost angry. It didn't make you feel better last night to see me completely lose my shit. It freaked you the fuck out. Don't try to tell me that it didn't, because I know you better than that.
Derek let his head fall back and thunk against the seat's headrest. Yes, I freaked the fuck out. I'm still freaking the fuck out.
There's no point in lying, especially when he had basically thrown another hissy fit 10 minutes prior at the thought of Styles going anywhere without him.
But A, you were going to lose your shit anyway. I know you well enough to know that. So it would have just frightened me more to try to deal with it blind. B, half of this is your issues, but let's not lie to ourselves. Half of it is mine.
Derek isn't stupid enough to think that the others haven't figured that out. But he doesn't think he would have been able to admit it to anyone except Styles.
Yeah, well,
Styles squirms a little, then sighs and surrenders. This sort of coping feels all backwards to me.
I just agreed to spend the next however many days wearing a little blue vest and reliving high school. Go ahead and tell me about fucked up coping mechanisms.
Styles lets out a little snigger despite himself. I guess at least I'm not the only one who's fucked up, or something like that. I just feel bad about the others seeing me like this. Especially the ones who weren't around after the whole Peter and Gerard debacle.
If you gave them the choice, they wouldn't leave,
Derek says, pulling Styles against his shoulder.
And not even just because of the perks. They all knew that they weren't the only basket cases when they signed on. We never made a secret of it.
Yeah,
Styles sighs, as his father pulls up in front of their house.
I'll go grab the vest, Stilinski says, getting out of the car. Be right back.
You'd better get shifted, Styles says.
Yeah.
Derek toes off his shoes and then eels out of the seat and into the well before peeling off his clothes. Because having a man strip in a police car would draw more attention than any of them can stand right now. The shifting of bone and muscle is smooth and natural, and before long there's a large wolf taking up the rest of the back seat, front paws and head resting in Styles' lap. Sometimes it's easier to talk to Derek when he's in his wolf form, and can't say anything back. Styles stares out the window for a minute, and then says, I just hate feeling weak. That, Derek can very much understand and sympathize with. He settles his weight a little more firmly and flicks his ears to show that he's listening. He could look up at Styles, but nobody likes to be stared at while making confessions of any sort.
But stop beating yourself up, okay? Styles adds. This wasn't your fault. We're going to get to the bottom of this, and we're going to fix it. That's a solid promise.
Derek presses his face into Styles' stomach. This was one of those times when being a wolf makes communication both easier and more difficult. With that one motion, he can accept the promise and express his trust in Styles to follow through on it, because the move leaves his throat vulnerable. But at the same time, he can't explain that this isn't just about beating himself up. Sure, some of it was guilt. He would always feel guilty anytime he failed to protect Styles. But a lot of it was raw, base instinct, fear. His alpha, who he had loved each time, had been taken away from him twice, murdered both times. Derek had loved his father and his sister fiercely. Styles was the first alpha he had chosen to follow. He was Styles' Lupa. They had built this pack together. No, it wasn't all guilt. It was near crippling fear of loss, which prompts the small whine from his throat. Styles rather absently runs his fingers through the fur of Derek's throat and chest, watching as his father comes back out to the car, carrying the blue vest they had gotten that proclaimed Derek a service animal. "We need more information," he finally says. "But I don't know what to do about Dr. Deaton. I don't know whether or not we can trust him." Derek's weight sags and he goes boneless underneath Styles' touch. It's comforting, as long as it's coming from Styles. He wouldn't be thrilled about anyone else laying their hands on his throat, even another pack member. He's not sure what to do about Deaton. The man's concern and efforts to help while Derek had been sick had seemed honest enough. Derek had never detected a lie. But he had been ill, and he had to take into account the possibility that Deaton could lie to wolves. Laura had mentioned him a few times, at least vaguely, and he had been helping her. But he had never mentioned that to Derek until directly cornered. Now Laura is dead, and Derek doesn't appreciate Deaton withholding information. In the end, he can't voice any of this, so he just gives a little shrug and then passes the buck by pawing at the back of the driver's seat. "Right," Style says, as his father gets back in the car. The man passes the vest back to them, and Style starts putting it on Derek. "Dad, what do you think we should do about Dr. Deaton?" Stilinski backs the cruiser out of the driveway and looks over his shoulder at Styles.
"Maybe you should just try talking to him."
Derek stands up on the seat so Styles can get the vest on him properly, his tail waving around to help him keep his balance in a moving car. It seems like such an absurdly simple, obvious solution. But then again, he can't be blamed for not coming up with it. It's a well-known fact that Derek has no communication skills. Styles frowns.
"What, just walk up to him and ask, 'Dr. Deaton, can we trust you?'"
His father gives a little shrug.
"You'd be surprised how far that can get you. He's helped you in the past. He seems like an honest guy. If he has a conflict of interest here for whatever reason, he may just tell you that."
Derek considers this for a minute. It seems reasonable enough to him. He tries to shrug and then nearly falls over in an undignified heap. Styles nods a little and says,
"Okay, I guess I can go talk to him this afternoon."
Derek files that away to wrangle into the schedule to work out at lunch. In fact, they should probably go down before everyone gets out of school. He sits down for the rest of the ride, and they pull up outside the police station a few minutes later. Styles fastens a collar around his neck and clips a leash to it.
"Sorry, dude," he says, keeping it only loosely wrapped around his hand, so Derek has plenty of slack as they get out of the car.
Derek heaves a long-suffering sigh, but then leans over to lick Styles' hand. He knows the laws and the role he volunteered to play, or basically insisted upon playing. He can't really bitch now. Sandy, the receptionist, looks up as the three of them come in.
"Hey, boss," she says. "Hi, Styles. Why aren't you at school today?"
Sheriff Stilinski steps in before Styles can come up with some Styles-esque excuse. Those are often entirely ridiculous and yet sometimes frighteningly believable.
"Morning, Sandy. He just finished training with his service dog yesterday, but we haven't cleared anything with the school yet."
Sandy gets a glimpse of Derek and her eyes go wide.
"Wow, he's huge," she says. "What's his name?"
There's a moment of completely blank silence when Styles wonders why he didn't anticipate this question and blurts out the first inoffensive name he can think of.
"Jack."
Derek, who isn't stupid, knows how a well-trained dog behaves and how to impress people. So as soon as the name leaves Styles' mouth, and really, it isn't bad for something off the cuff, given all the possible ridiculous choices,
He sits up and looks at Stiles expectantly.
Yeah, he is.
Stilinski agrees, trying not to crack a grin at the un-Derek-like behavior. He's going to cost me a fortune in food.
He eats less than me, Stiles says, which is actually true.
I guess I'm not supposed to pet him, huh? Sandy says, somewhat wistfully. That's too bad. I have an uncle who breeds German Shepherds. They're great dogs. But I didn't know you were getting a service dog.
She looks at Stiles in blatant curiosity.
What for?
You know, you're not actually allowed to ask that, Stiles says. Like, if I bring him into a grocery store, they can't make me leave. And if they ask what type of service dog he is, I don't have to answer.
True. The ADA does protect you against that, Stilinski says, though his tone doesn't really reprimand Sandy for asking. It's hard to forget that she used to help him look after Stiles when he was 8 and his mother had just died, and Stilinski couldn't bring himself to let anyone else help with his grieving son. Not when he was still grieving himself. A lot of people at the station had helped watch Stiles back then. When he had been missing the previous winter, the entire station had been working around the clock without even being asked, helping the sheriff try to find him. But he doesn't answer the question for Stiles either. He doesn't think he has the right to without Stiles' permission. Frankly, if the kid didn't have a pack of werewolves, Stilinski really would have given thought to getting him a service dog. So he just raises his eyebrows at Stiles.
Oh, Sandy says, blinking in response.
Stiles just smiles at her and doesn't miss a beat.
He's for PTSD, you know, because of what happened last winter. Like veterans get service dogs for. He keeps me from being crowded and stuff.
His size doesn't hurt in that regard, the sheriff says, amused. Come on, kid. Let's get to work. You can help sort all those unpaid parking tickets that are lying around in my office.
Don't you have staff for that? Stiles gripes, following his father into the office.
It'll appeal to the OCD tendencies you don't like to admit to. But once the door to the office is closed, he pulls Stiles into a hug.
I really am proud of you.
Stiles sighs but doesn't protest. It didn't seem worth coming up with a cover story when everyone here pretty much knows what a wreck I am.
You're not a wreck. You've actually got PTSD. That does not make you a wreck.
Stiles pulls away and rubs a hand over the back of his head, embarrassed.
Yeah, well, look, no matter what I say here about severity of initial trauma or recovery time or all the different research I've done, you're just going to give me that look. So how about I just sort some unpaid parking tickets and you go do sheriffing stuff, okay?
Sheriff Stilinski lets him go and says, I'm your father. It's my job to give you that look. But he starts gathering up piles of tickets from various bins and folders. Derek finds himself a corner that's relatively out of the way and settles down there.
Yeah, yeah, Stiles says, and looks down at his phone as it jingles.
Scott's texted me to let me know they've all gotten to school okay, he says, and some of the tension leaves his shoulders. Derek gives a pleased woof.
Good, Stilinski says, glad they all made it safely and that Stiles is unwinding a little.
He holds out a handful of messy tickets to his son, then gives his shoulder a squeeze as he leaves the office to do his job. Stiles manages to sit in one place for almost 30 minutes, which is surely some sort of record while there are disasters going on. Then he abruptly stands up and says, "Let's go see Dr. Deaton." Derek lifts his head, but then gives a little nod. If he were in his human form, he would ask why Stiles had decided that so suddenly, but it doesn't seem worth shifting back for an answer that will undoubtedly be some form of, I don't know. He watches Stiles pick up the leash, and the two of them pad out of Stilinski's office. Sandy looks up and frowns.
Aren't you supposed to be staying here, doing what your dad asked you to do?
Done it already, Stiles says. Itchy feet. Be back in a bit. Sandy is obviously thinking about protesting, but apparently decides that since she's not Stiles' mother, and the sheriff had not left her specific instructions, there's only so much she can do.
Okay, but you'd better let him know where you're going, she calls after him, as he leaves the station. He waves over his shoulder at her, then decides she's probably right. He taps out a quick text to his father to let him know that he's going down to the clinic. Surprisingly, Dr. Deaton does employ people other than Scott, and they're greeted by a perky receptionist. Stiles realizes belatedly that they probably should have called, since Dr. Deaton does have a job and patients to see. He clears his throat and says, hi, I'm bringing my dog, Derek, in for a checkup. Last name? She prompts. Stilinski. There's a pause. You aren't on the schedule. I'm not? Stiles says, playing dumb. He saw him a couple of weeks ago. He was sick with a virus. He said he wanted to check up on him. Well, let me see if he has a few minutes, she says, and disappears into the back. Stiles takes a seat and waits. She comes back a few minutes later and says that they'll work him in, but he may have a bit of a wait. Stiles is appropriately grateful and pulls out his phone, checking to see if he has any new texts, which he does not. Derek heaves a dog-like sigh and lays down at Stiles' feet. They end up waiting half an hour before the secretary waves them back. Dr. Deaton greets them cordially enough, asks Derek how he's feeling, and shows them back into his office. It's just as messy and disorganized as it was 3 weeks previous. Deaton moves a stack of charts off a chair and gestures for the two of them to sit down. What's on your mind? He asks, since it's pretty clear that they aren't here for the typical type of checkup. I need to ask you a question, Stiles says, and you're probably not going to like it. Deaton's smile never falters. Go ahead. The night that we found that little voodoo doll that was making Derek sick, you recognized it, Stiles says. Not the doll itself, but the spell. I saw the look on your face when you saw it. You recognized the magic and you knew who had done it. I didn't say anything because, I guess, I didn't know what to say. So I'm just going to let it go. But this guy isn't going away, so now I'm in a bit of a pickle. So my question for you is, can I trust you? There's a long silence. Dr. Deaton folds his hands on his desk and studies them for a moment, before looking up at Stiles. You're right in that I do know who this sorcerer is, he says. I didn't know before I saw the doll, or I would have been able to treat Derek more effectively. He gives the wolf a slight nod. Let's just say this is someone to whom I owe a debt, which puts me in an uncomfortable position. Stiles nods a little. I get that. I made a promise to Derek's mother, Deaton continues, that I would look out for her son when I was at all capable. Derek lifts his head and blinks at him in surprise. A few moments later, he's shifted into his human form. You did? You knew my mother? Deaton doesn't respond to his question, but just continues with what he was saying. So I guess what I can tell you is that I will do all that I can to help you, but there are certain lines that I won't be able to cross where this person is concerned. Does that make sense? Stiles gives another nod. Yes, and thank you. As long as you'll be able to tell me when we've hit one of those lines. I don't see why not. Great, Stiles says, and rises to go. I'm sorry, but can we get back to the part where you knew my mother? Derek says, a little more loudly than is strictly necessary. Stiles thinks about telling him that he does not look at all threatening, what with being naked and also having a collar and a leash around his now human neck. Because I feel like I've been missing some crucial information here. Maybe if I had known that, I wouldn't have, you know, thought you were an alpha werewolf and abducted you from your own clinic. Deaton clears his throat. A lot of us could have handled things better that night. Stiles snickers despite himself. Ya think? Both of the other men ignore him, and Deaton continues. But yes, I knew your mother for a long time. I've acted as something of an advisor, maybe a supernatural consultant, to various families, and the Hale family was one of them. As you know, just because you're a werewolf doesn't mean that you know all about the supernatural world, so my job was to keep the Hale family informed. And yes,
Long before the fire, I promised your mother that I would keep an eye on her children when at all possible. It's a dangerous world that we all live in now.
Derek's jaw clenches. He's clearly not at all pleased with this answer.
Why didn't you ever say anything? He demands.
I assumed you knew. Laura came straight to me when she arrived in Beacon Hills. When you didn't, I thought perhaps there was a reason you didn't want to ask me. To protect me, or because you thought I might have been involved in Laura's death. Or even simple pride. So I waited. And to be fair, the night you came to my clinic, you didn't exactly give me a chance to explain.
Maybe if you'd even tried.
Okay, okay, Stiles says. What's done is done. As he said, a lot of people made stupid decisions right around then.
Derek subsides, although he looks somewhat sour about it.
You make it hard to want to trust you.
Deaton raises his eyebrows and says,
You make it hard to want to help you.
Derek growls underneath his breast.
Okay,
Stiles says again, getting out of his chair so fast he nearly knocks it over. On that note, I think we'll be going now, Dr. Deaton. Thanks for your help while he was sick.
He takes Derek by the elbow and tugs him out of his chair, but he doesn't really need to. The wolf is already turning to follow him. Being alpha does have its advantages. He waits for Derek to shift back into his wolf form and picks up the leash. Then he stops and says, Dr. Deaton, has this man contacted you since coming to town?
What makes you think that? Deaton asks. Just curious, Stiles says.
Then yes, Deaton says. He's emailed me a couple of times. Cryptic little poems. I haven't replied to any of them.
Could I read them? Stiles asks. Deaton hesitates, then shakes his head, and says,
No.
Stiles studies him for a minute, then says, Okay, thanks again. He turns and jogs out of the veterinarian's office, getting back to the jeep and heading for the station. He taps on the steering wheel while he drives, deep in thought. Derek, who is obviously sulking, sits in the back with his head resting on his paws. After a minute, since Derek obviously isn't good about people keeping secrets from him, Stiles says, You should probably also know that all your treatment was covered, financially, by some sort of secret fund your parents put in their will.
Derek lifts his head. Then he gives an angry growl and lowers it again.
Deaton told me while you were sick, Stiles continues. I didn't mention it because, well, you were sick. And then other things happened, so I wasn't really thinking about it. Your parents trusted Dr. Deaton, Derek. I think we should too.
Derek heaves a sigh.
That being said, you want to help me break into his office tonight and read those emails?
There's a chuff that's obviously a laugh. Derek springs up and leans over the seat to slobber all over Stiles' shoulder, which Stiles greets with a laugh, and then rolls onto his back to continue letting out little wolfy chuckles. Stiles takes that as a yes and whistles the rest of the way back to the station.